From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last Tuesday, February 7th, when the U.S. Senate deadlocked on a vote to confirm Betsy DeVos as the next Secretary of Education. With that 50-50 tie, Vice President Mike Pence used his vote to break the tie, the first time a cabinet nominee had ever been confirmed after a tie vote in our history. So Betsy DeVos begins her role with the goal of making some significant changes. In particular, DeVos has been a longtime supporter of school choice. That can mean different things in different places, but she said at her confirmation hearing that parents deserve more options for where their kids go to school. Last month, there was a National School Choice Week, so we reached out to the organizers. We reached out to the organizers of National School Choice Week multiple times. They asked us to cover their events. We asked them to join us on the panel to discuss Betsy DeVos, but they did not respond to multiple requests from us. And so here's what we're doing. Today, we're welcoming leaders in public school education on different levels. They'll discuss their views on what is coming next for public education. And we're still trying to put together a conversation with supporters of school choice, or at least, you know, sort of out-and-out supporters. And I know there are those in our community, so we'll try to bring that conversation to you very soon. But with that, let me go ahead and welcome my guests for the hour. In studio with us, Steve Eubing is the director of the East EPO Project. He's a professor at the Warner School of Education at the University of Rochester. Steve, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Adam Urbanski is president of the Rochester Teachers Association. Adam, welcome back to you.
Thank you.
Van White, president of the Rochester City School Board. Van, welcome to you.
Good afternoon, Evan.
And Trina Newton is on the line with us. She's the superintendent of the Geneva Central School District. Trina, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
All right, let me start with what Betsy DeVos had to say. In fact, these are some of the very first remarks she made after Joe Lieberman introduced her for her Senate confirmation hearings. Here she is talking about how she perceives the importance of school choice.
Why in 2017 are we still questioning parents' ability to exercise educational choice for their children? I'm a firm believer that parents should be empowered to choose the learning environment that's best for each of their individual children. The vast majority of students in this country will continue to attend public schools. If confirmed, I will be a strong advocate for great public schools. But if a school is troubled or unsafe or not a good fit for a child, perhaps they have a special need that's going unmet, we should support a parent's right to enroll their child in a high-quality alternative.
That's Betsy DeVos talking about school choice in her confirmation hearings. Let's listen to what our panel has to say. I'll start with Van White. What do you think, Van?
Well, I'm all for choice. I'm all for quality choices for our students. I just believe that the Rochester City School District can provide those choices. And while we have not always done a great job at that, I have the faith in our staff, in our leaders, in our parents, in our students, including teachers, cafeteria ladies, sentries, to provide that top-notch quality programming, instruction, so that parents have choices. I don't have time or the energy to focus on Secretary DeVos. That's not my focus. My focus and the focus of my colleagues is to make sure that parents, when they look at a brochure describing our schools, to make sure they have the choices within our district, because we have the teachers, we have the principals, we have the people that can do the job.
Within your district.
Within our
district. But you're not supporting school choice the way Betsy DeVos is implying she wants it, which is to basically give people vouchers or tax dollars to say, if you don't like where you are, where your kids are, you can choose. You can get out of there.
I do sort of look at this sort of dynamic as an opportunity, because I think there are people who've gotten lazy in our system to think that, hey, listen, we can just ride this public school train because people are going to send their kids to our schools. I think there's a blessing to this. And again, to answer your question, no, I do not want. Well, let me be clear about this. I don't have the time to focus on Ms. DeVos. If she's going to go out there and push for vouchers, that's not something I'm going to advocate for. What I think we ought to do to respond to that is provide quality choices to our students. I think competition can be a good thing, but I'm not the guy spending time thinking about charter schools or vouchers.
She is. She's Secretary of Education
And the law creates that position. But the law also creates boards of education for traditional public schools. And it is our job to make sure that we create those choices so they're not looking at the charter schools.
So you're not really worried about this, are you?
I'm not. I don't have time to worry about it. We got to develop quality programs for our students here in this community.
Adam Obransky, are you worried about it?
Yes, I'm worried about it.
More worried than Van?
More worried than Van this time. Usually he's more worried than I am. But I agree with much with what President White has said. Look, let me be succinct about this. Betsy DeVos is a disaster of a choice for sector of education. She's not qualified. She never attended public schools. Her children never attended. She's never been spotted in one that I know of. She had conflicts of interest, gave money to people who voted to appoint her. She had unresolved ethics issues. And she's not coming into this job the way we would like to see someone come into the job, with an open mind to all perspectives. She's already got an agenda. And her agenda has been and continues to be to systematically divert money from public schools to privatization and to dismantle public education, beginning with urban schools. But here's the silver lining in this cloud. This is why I don't think we should have any hysteria about Betsy DeVos. The Federal Department of Education controls approximately 7.5-8% of the money and of the mandates in education. Most of education is state and local, and I suggest that what we should focus on, and I agree with President White on this, is on getting our act together here in Rochester, because 92-93% of the decisions are still within our control, despite Betsy DeVos.
Okay. Steve Eubing, what do you think?
So I tend to agree with Adam. I wouldn't want to gloss over the impact of this appointment. But in terms of actual money being involved, President Trump had made a campaign promise of $20 billion for more charter schools. Deep and buried in the charter school traditional laws is a tax credit for investors, so for-profit schools can see up to a 30% tax credit. So that's a way of diverting federal dollars back into for-profit charter schools. I think it's hard as an American to be against anything that involves a choice, because the fundamental libertarian view that we all have is that we want choices. I don't have choices in everything. Sometimes I agree to a more socialized approach that's in the interest of the greater good. So I worry about choices that create dogma that is in conflict to our pluralistic society and our Constitution. I worry about choices that negate the rights of some populations.
Why would school choice negate the right of any population if Betsy DeVos has her way in this case? In this model, Steve, how would that work?
So the best example is her almost cavalier regard for students with disabilities. In her hearings, she said that these issues regarding students with disabilities should go to the states. Well, there's a reason that protections are in place to be enforced by the Department of Education for students with disabilities. They are a class that needs additional protection. And one of the functions of the Department of Education is to ensure that their civil rights, due process, equal protection under the law, and due process are protected. And the agency of the federal government that does that is the Department of Education.
She was not aware of that in her confirmation hearing. She had to be corrected.
We could go back and look at her qualifications, and that would be a different show. That debate's over. She is the Secretary of Education. She would do well to understand the history of students with disabilities, the history of English language learners, and the things that have happened over the years in some respect because of public school practices, but in another respect because of choice practices. After Brown v. Board of Education, we had crop up in the South hundreds and hundreds of segregated academies because people wanted to use their choice option and not become part of an integrated school district. That was their choice, and they did it on their dime. you see. And that's their right to do that on their dime. But now you're going to do it on the common dime. And we're going to use everybody's tax dollars to support choices that may not be consistent with what the Constitution suggests is a pluralistic society. We believe, you know, that Declaration of Independence, all men are created equal.
Let me get Superintendent Trina Newton from Geneva next up. What do you think, Trina?
I have to agree with everyone that's on the panel. I will also add that I'm not afraid of competition, and I don't think any of the area schools are afraid of competition. Parents certainly have choices. And as a public school, we have to step up to bat and make sure that we're meeting the needs of all children, which is extremely difficult in a public school system. And I do know that in a lot of the charter schools and a lot of the private schools, they're not held to the same accountability. So if competition is fine, but everyone should have to operate under the same rules. I would also say, as the superintendent of a small city school district with 62% free and reduced lunch rate, there's also a question of equitable funding. And if what we're hearing, and I do not know what is true, what's factual, what isn't factual, is that we're looking at a reduction in the title funds that we receive from the federal government, which would be a devastation to a district like Geneva with a 14% English as a new language students, and we have 13% of our students are students with disabilities. So, you know, we're still waiting to see what type of policy she's going to shape. But it does make me nervous as the superintendent of a small city district.
I want to explore more about what we think could happen, even though Van White's not worried about it. Van's not saying he's not worried about it. He's saying he's got a lot to worry about in Rochester. And he's got to control what he can control in Rochester. I understand exactly the point. But I want to explore what happens if school choice really takes the shape that Secretary DeVos would like in a couple of ways. I'm going to start with Trina on this question, which is totally unfair because Geneva is not a rural district. But Trina, you're a little closer to rural districts throughout the Finger Lakes region. Here's a Washington Post headline. Let me go ahead and read this. Where school choice isn't an option, rural public schools worry they'll be left behind. And they write about Eric Steves, the superintendent of schools in East Millinocket in Maine. It's a rural district. He says rural schools are often left out of conversations about policy decisions. And those like Schenck, institutions that educate millions of students nationwide, rural schools, stand to gain very little from the school choice model. And if anything, it could be disastrous. Quote, "It could be disastrous for us. We'd lose tuition money. And if we're forced to bus students wherever they want, it would be catastrophic. 60 miles away, it may be up to towns to pay for that. In this weather, how are we going to pay to bus students far, far away if they're not happy in their rural district?" Trina, is there a reasonable concern about that?
Absolutely. I mean, right now we have a student that under the McKinney-Vento Act is homeless. And they are in a shelter in Rochester. It's not as if I have a lot of buses in the Geneva City School District and a lot of drivers, but we send a driver dedicated every day to Rochester to pick up a kindergartner and make sure they're back here before we open our doors, and then they turn around and drive them back to Rochester. If we have school choice, where we have several students going in different directions and we're forced to transport those students, that will take a toll on our transportation budget, which will be paid for by our local taxpayers. I will also say that there is a concern every time you take a student out of a small rural district, and we're not a small rural district, we're 2,300 students, but I think about the neighboring districts, it's going to have an impact on what they can or cannot offer. As again, that goes back to the choice. And the students that cost us the most to educate, and they deserve the best education we can give them, it means as dollars are being pulled away from the school districts, we'll still have to meet all of the unfunded mandates, and what we don't offer is what students will lose. The art, the music is my fear, anything that isn't mandated.
All right, let me now get two comments that are one's a full-throated defense of DeVos and school choice, and another is an email from a listener. So a lot to chew on here, but I'll read them both, and then I'll let our panelists respond. First, Jeff Jacoby, writing in the Boston Globe, defended Betsy DeVos and attacked her critics. And this is part of his commentary there. Quote, DeVos, the next Secretary of Education, is a billionaire who has for years channeled her money and energy into the cause of education reform, especially for the underprivileged. Yet her nomination drove the left to a frenzy of opposition evoked by no other cabinet nominee. Teachers' unions, which exercise so much clout in Democratic Party circles, despise DeVos because of her passion for dramatically expanding school choice through charter schools, through online virtual teaching, through homeschooling, and through vouchers to pay for private or parochial school tuition. Polls routinely find that substantial majorities of Americans favor more school choice, and as the stunning number of student names on charter school waiting lists demonstrate, the hunger for a better option than the local public school is anything but theory. But the reasons to liberate Americans from the monopoly of government-run schooling go beyond educational outcomes and academic success. School choice also promotes peace. Public schools, it is said, bring together children from differing backgrounds and imbue them with the shared values that unite our pluralist society and prevent balkanization. It's a pretty theory, but it has never been true. End quote. That last line seems to be saying segregation is more peaceful. I don't know, but the bottom line is there's Jeff Jacoby. And now let me read James's email. It just came into the program. He says, Evan, redlining didn't just control where people lived. It also controlled where children went to school. It seems to me that school choice programs would directly address a pillar of systemic racism, that is, the neighborhood school system. Could you ask your panel about that? That's from James. There's a lot there. Van, does that make you more concerned?
No, as you correctly pointed out, it's not that I'm not
concerned. I know.
Concerned.
I'm giving you a hard time.
Go ahead. Know. That's all right. That's all right. I'm used to it. But I do think that this raises an opportunity for our teachers, our school board members, our superintendent, paraprofessionals, to consider what they can do to improve the likelihood that a parent will choose their school. Because, listen, this
But they're not already doing that? You don't think they're doing that already?
Well, I think some are. I think many are. But I think this is an opportunity for us to reconsider that. And I'm not just talking about folks in the schools. I'm talking about school board members. I'm talking about community organizations, businesses in this area. What can we do to improve that a lot? Now, East High School and U of R are a great example of that. SUNY Geneseo is a great example of that. Adam and his colleagues at RTA and Dan DiClemente and Bente and all the other organizations that got together to put together what is now a school that I think a lot of parents are choosing now. So I think, listen, there's only so much we can do. She is, as Steve pointed out, she is our Secretary of Education. The United States now has a Secretary of Education. There's nothing we can do about that right now. And they have their mindset with respect to what that school choice option looks like. I'm not saying that that is not relevant. And in fact, I do think it could have an impact. But it will only have an impact if this district, and I'm talking about every person from top to bottom, side to side, fails to consider what they can do to make a parent say, I want my child to go to that city school.
Okay, but do you agree with Jacoby in the Boston Globe saying that Betsy DeVos is a billionaire who has directed her attention to helping the underprivileged, that is her mission?
Listen, maybe people disagree. I don't have time for that. I don't. I have to consider people that I work with and people that I collaborate with. I have to look across the street and say, is there an opportunity for me to work with somebody at Kodak or the president at MCC and get a college prep program in there? I have to look across the table to Adam Urbanski and say, Adam, what can we, and let me tell you something, Adam and I were at the Peppermill restaurant a few weeks ago talking about creating an option. We're not going to talk about it now. Creating an option that parents might find attractive. I think that's our task. If I spend all my time looking at what's going on in Washington, which, by the way, they don't control Common Core, despite what Kellyanne Conway says. They have, as Adam points out, they have very limited access to manipulate us based on their limited contribution to our resources. If I spend my time focusing on them and not figuring out what are the partnerships that we can develop that will make parents want to stay in this community, I think that's wasted time.
All right, Adam, a lot to take there. Go ahead.
Well, I don't buy that Betsy DeVos is a billionaire who spends her money
helping the underprivileged.
I think she's a billionaire who spent her life, adult life, trying to privatize education and to make money off children. I think she's using the affinity for underprivileged as a cover for that.
Is it possible she really believes it's better for kids?
If she is, there is a disconnect between her track record and her words. She is trying to divert money from public schools. Now, let me just put this in context. There are 50 million children in public schools in this country. There's less than 5 or 6% of those children who attend, that many who attend private and parochial schools and so forth. And I do believe in the right of families to make a choice for their children's education. I really do. Whatever they choose, homeschooling, private schools, public schools, and I support all good schools. But what you're doing here, what she's proposing is a cure that's worse than the disease. She is saying, let's siphon money away from public schools where most children who are in most dire need are, in order to help those whom God has already helped. Because the truly disadvantaged families don't even know what the right questions are when it comes to choices for their children's schools. So I think we should have more choice, but fair choice. And I think that we should be more ambitious than just try to help a few more to opt out. I think we should do everything we can to improve public schools. That's the only effective antidote to other choices.
Okay, Steve Eubing.
I'm going to react to the Boston Globe comment about it's a nice theory but not really practical, because it sounds like exactly what I worry about. The track record so far is that charter schools, and by the way, when we talk about Betsy DeVos's view of charter schools, we're not talking about the kind of charter schools you see here in the city of Rochester. We're talking about lack of accountability, lack of regulation, and some really scary scandals that have happened over the years, and many of which, by the way, the bulk of the charter schools in Michigan are for profit. So that's not what we're talking about per se when we compare it to what we have. We have some really good charter schools right here in Rochester. But the research has made it clear that charter schools tend to create more segregation, not less. They tend to both racially and socioeconomically. And for-profit charter schools particularly tend to create more segregation, not less. Especially that's been especially demonstrated in Michigan. This thing that really scares me is do the niche schools end? Can we start to see niche schools that are built around certain philosophies that are antithetical to what we believe as Americans, but what some people may believe individually? Do I get to send my kid to a niche school that where he doesn't have to come in contact with any African Americans or any Latinos? Are they going to be under the same kind of regulations and civil rights protections that we are? I had a parent once ask me when I was a superintendent in a different life if I could guarantee her that her child would not be in a class with any students with disabilities. I don't want any special ed kids in my kid's class. Can you guarantee me that? I said, I can almost guarantee the opposite. You know, 12.5% of our kids in my district were children with disabilities. I can almost guarantee you there will be children with special needs, and your child's going to get to know them and be part of their lives, and they're going to be part of her life, and I think that's a good thing. Well, it's not what I want. I understand that. So if she wants to make a choice to do something else, that's her option. But the question is, should we support it with federal tax dollars or state tax dollars? And that's everybody's tax dollars, supporting something that's I couldn't do in a public school because it'd be against the law.
So you see more segregation coming through this kind of a model?
Well, that's been the track record, not so much here in Rochester. Most charter schools, by the way, are in cities, except in the big charter school states like Michigan. And what you see in Michigan, kind of interestingly, if you look at the history of Holland High School outside in Holland, Michigan, where they've lost a lot of students because they're close to a city and they have a highly diverse student body. What they've seen is the white kids leaving Holland High School and going to surrounding higher income schools and being bused, by the way, by the local school district, and the African American kids staying behind in Holland. More segregation, more and less of the kind of pluralistic society that I thought we were about in this country.
Adam, go ahead.
Yeah, let me just tell you, we don't have to speculate what would happen. We know what happened because there were states and communities where you had tuition tax credits and vouchers and so forth. So here's a scenario, a common scenario. A school charges $15,000 a year, let's say, for a private school, right, for tuition. You come up with a $10,000 voucher with public money. Typically, almost without exception, that private school raises its tuition by $10,000. Because now they know these people can afford 15, now they're getting 10 more, they raise their tuition. So it helps those whom God has already helped. And who's left behind? The children, particularly in urban districts and in poor rural districts, who cannot afford that tuition, they're left with less money.
But can I just ask one more quick follow-up, and I'll turn to Trina for her reaction to some of what I read, but I want to ask Van one important point here. Because Van, I mean, nobody denies redlining happened, right? Mm-hmm. It happened in Rochester.
Sure.
That we have a history of housing discrimination, that families, particularly African-American families, families of color, moved here, were discriminated against, had housing fraud, and that if there is a crescent, it was often created by people in power, which usually meant white people. All those things are real. And what James is emailing the program to say is, if we acknowledge that that's real, and we created that these sections of poverty, of extreme poverty, and we did that, and now there are neighborhood schools, and they have to go to school there, doesn't school choice give them a way to something different? Isn't that a way to break up some of the inequity that we created?
Again, I'm not debating or arguing what these gentlemen across the table are saying, Steve and Adam are saying. What I'm saying is, and this may not be the answer you all want to hear, but I am like a racehorse with blinders, focused exclusively on improving the choices for our parents in our district. And here's the reality. You all can talk about what the consequences will be. You got a Republican-controlled Congress, and you got a Republican-controlled Senate. They're going to, I'm not a defeat, you guys who know me, I'm not a guy who says, screw it, I give up, whatever you want to do to me. That's not me. That is not me. But there's a reality to what's happening in Washington. The confirmation hearings are over. She is Secretary of Education. We have to focus, like with racehorse blinders, on improving our schools so that our students have options. And I'm saying to my colleagues, I'm saying to everybody in this community, unless we do that, we will lose this battle. We will absolutely, and we can protest, and I'm all for protest. I'm a civil rights lawyer. I get redlining. I've sued people for that kind of stuff. But the fact is, I'm wearing a hat right now that says I'm part of a 8-member team with a superintendent and thousands of employees. And our focus has to be exclusively not on Washington, but Rochester.
Okay, Stephen Adam, do you think that James is making a point about Rochester, that redlining happened, that school choice may be a way to help those families to create more of a balance?
So the arguments broader than that. It's not just, is choice a good thing or a bad thing? Choice is probably a good thing. The kind of choices that Secretary DeVos is putting forward would be detrimental, if not disastrous, to not just public education, but I think if you were to do something to put a major crack in public schooling, in cities and rural areas especially, where the public school is the center, the heart of a community, where everything revolves around that school in our small rural communities in Livingston, Wayne, Genesee, Niagara, Orleans counties. Those schools can't exist in a highly competitive environment. Primarily, and by the way, I don't think the populations of people who live there want a highly competitive environment. But if there were choices, and you did crack that, what would happen? What would happen to Medina, New York, or Albion, or Newark, New York, without their strong public school system?
I think Professor Ewing is exactly right. We should depolarize this whole conversation. This should not be people lining up either for unbridled choice or totally against choice. It's a losing argument to be against any choices. I think what we should be for is more choices than we now have. But we ought to put an equal emphasis on making sure that these choices are fair to everyone. Everybody could probably agree on that, because it's a disaster to have no constraints on choice. You know who's going to benefit from that. And it's also a loser of an argument to say that families shouldn't have any choices or even more choices than they now have. And President White is absolutely right. The best, most effective way to fight other choices is to make your schools the number one choice for everybody.
All right, Trina Newton on Twitter, Nahoka, writes to us and says, we say we need choice because of unequal access to quality education, but people with resources have always had choice. That's from Nahoka. Now, Trina, Jeff Jacoby in the Boston Globe says Betsy DeVos would agree with that, and that her school choice and her educational philosophy is helping the underprivileged. Do you believe that the new Secretary of Education's main goal is helping the underprivileged? In Geneva, anywhere.
You know, I don't know Betsy DeVos personally. I can only tell you from what I read. I do not believe that what she is proposing will help the students in the Geneva City School District. My poorest students, my students whose parents and the students themselves don't speak English. I think there is a system that's set up out there. Who already know the system and have the means will take advantage of it. And a lot of my students will be left behind. Especially in, I mean, we're not rural, but we're in a rural area.
Yeah.
So, well, and if I could just,
yep.
I agree with President White. I think that as a public school system, we really need to take a look at what we're doing and how we're doing it. When I walked into Geneva in 2012, this was a district that was on the verge of being taken over by the state. Our graduation rate was embarrassing. It was in the 60s. It had hit 70 my first year. We're now up to 85%. And there are some very invested community members in Geneva who came together and created Geneva 2020, its collective impact. And what they have said is we've got to invest in our public schools, and that means the entire community. And they really have rallied. They have supported the schools along with my school district. And what we're seeing within this our school district is we now have a multi-language learners program. And outside of the cities, I think we're the only one that has a dual-language Mandarin, dual-language Spanish at the elementary school. We're creating an aviation program for our STEM. So we're looking at those online classes. We actually have students that are taking online classes. We encourage it. Courses at HWS, at FLCC. So I do think that we need to take a look at how we're delivering instruction to students, and we need to make changes so that there are choices within the public schools.
Steve, I'm going to give you 30 seconds, Steve, and then I've got to get to I'm very late for a break, and I'm going to be in trouble. Go ahead, Steve.
So think about the breadth of choices that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Are we talking about giving a parent $12,000 to put his child by the computer all day in an online learning or provide home instruction to that child themselves and with that voucher? And they may be providing a great program. Or are we talking about actually giving parents a choice between school systems that meet the criteria that we define as a sound basic education? What are we talking about with choices? It's too big a continuum to just say yes choice, no choice. Adam's right. Of course we support some kind of choice, but where does it end?
All right. Our only break of the hour, and we come back to your phone calls, some of your emails and comments as we continue our discussion on the confirmation of Betsy DeVos, the next secretary. Well, she's now the Secretary of Education, and some of what may be coming to public schools. You just heard Steve Eubing, who's director of the East EPO Project and a professor of educational leadership, among other things, at the Warner School of Education at the University of Rochester. Adam Urbanski is president of the RTA, the Rochester Teachers Association. Van White, president of the Rochester City School Board. And Trina Newton is on the line with us, superintendent of the Geneva Central School District. Your phone calls are next. I'm Evan Dawson, Tuesday on The Next Connections. First hour, President Trump has cleared the way for both the Keystone Pipeline and the Dakota Access Pipeline. And in doing so, he says he hasn't heard one complaint. We will talk with those who have gone to protest, and we'll talk about what comes next for these projects. Then in our second hour, we're talking about what it means to be a sanctuary city and what's next for Rochester. All right, welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's get to your phone calls. And Bruce and Aranda, quite first up. Go ahead, Bruce. Hi, Bruce.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So my major question is if the education that they're putting forth in these charter schools is so good, why are we not doing it in our regular schools? And I agree so much with the education in public schools is a wall. And if you start taking bricks out of that wall, the wall will crumble. They're going to take the best students out. They're not taking these other students that are down there. There's more to getting into these schools than just money. Now, some of them do have a certain amount of people they'll take that don't meet their education criteria, but most of them don't. So you start taking out these students who are better and leaving the rest there, and you start taking down the wall of finance that, that supports the institution, it'll just crumble.
Listen, Van White, thank you, Bruce. Go ahead, Van.
Yeah, Bruce is right, and I've been preaching this for a while. I mean, we are hemorrhaging students and families that are really focusing on their kids' education. And so if Betsy DeVos is allowed to do what she and her Republican colleagues in the House and the Senate are inclined to do, they will create vouchers. There's no Democratic wall stopping them from doing that. They will create more charter schools to the extent they can influence state legislatures to do that. Our state has already indicated a proclivity to do that anyway. So if they're doing that, what's going to, and you all, we see this happen. The parents that are already engaged and critical of teachers and parents, which is benefits all, you know, they go and they say, hey, why isn't my son in this AP class, right? Those are the kind of parents we need. They have an infectious impact on the rest of the population of our students. If Betsy is able to do what she wants to do, there'll be more vouchers and parents will have more choice to send their kids out. So here's my point. We have to keep those parents, and I think this is what this caller is saying, we have to keep those parents in our schools. How do we keep those parents in our schools? By focusing with laser-like accuracy on improving the choices for our schools. And I just want to add, it's not like we don't have good choices. We do have some good choices. East High School is an example. Edison is doing some great things. SOTA, School Without Walls, number 19 school is going to hook up with Geneseo, World of Inquiry, number 23 school. I could go on about the great staff that we have doing great things already. But let me be clear about this to everybody in Rochester. Unless, because things are going the way they are in Washington, and I'm not the person who's going to be marching. There may be people who are marching against it. I'm not the person who's in Congress who can make that argument. I am the person, along with seven other people in Rochester, who is responsible for providing good choices in the Rochester City School District. And unless we do that, we will continue to hemorrhage students even more so now because Betsy DeVos has the feeder tube going into our district, draining away those parents. And unless we say, let's get those choices for our parents to get them to stay here, we will lose those students.
And what happens to the schools then, Van?
Well, I think it's a ripple effect. I think we still have our great teachers there and great principals and cafeteria ladies, but they do need good parents to support their work. And if those parents are leaving and we're saying, well, you know what, we'll go and protest in Washington and we're not spending our energy fixing and tweaking and improving and expanding the number of effective choices for our parents, we're going to wither on the vine. We will become irrelevant.
Okay.
Yeah, I just want to add one thing. It's a really stubborn myth that charter schools are doing better than public schools. The research on that so far is pretty consistent, and it comes from some very conservative think tanks and from Stanford University, and it pretty much agrees. They agree that about one-third of charter schools do better than public schools, about one-third do worse, and about one-third do just about the same. So the fact that the ones that do better are the more likely to survive has created the impression that charter schools do better. They don't do better in the long run, and even if they did, you cannot improve the education of 50 million children by allowing 500,000 to opt out.
Okay, Steve?
So I'll kind of fly over President White's call to action here and just talk about what we actually do know, and that what we know is that integration works. The great schools movement that's going on here in Rochester, that's looking at some of the experiences in countywide schools in the South, that the more we bring kids together, a rising tide does raise all boats. All of the civil rights issues, Charlotte Mecklenburg, for example, when they withdrew the court order, the academic achievement of African-American students then went down, but it was moving up all the way, that they were integrated for a number of reasons, one of which is the more affluent, high-expectation parents you have in a school, the more the school has to meet those high expectations and everybody benefits. So of all those kids, and you ask the question, what happens if everybody leaves? You still have kids in those schools.
Yeah.
You know,
happens to them?
No child left behind, no school left behind. Then you have the schools where the kids weren't able to leave, weren't able to go to the suburbs, weren't able to get to a charter school. We have some great charter schools in this country, and especially in Rochester. But Adam's precisely correct. The research suggests they do about as well as public schools. There are some wonderful charter school opportunities and some that have actually, you know, ended up in court because of criminal activity and malfeasance of funds. So it's, for every complex issue, there's usually a simple solution, and it's usually wrong. And just choice is a good thing. Responsible, well-planned choice is a better thing.
All right, Trina Newton?
I have to agree with everyone on the panel. I mean, there's a lot of research out there around the public schools and around the charter schools. And just my personal opinion, I believe that a problem is being created that doesn't really exist. If we were to focus on public schools and really take a look at who we are educating and equity issues, I think that if all that money was funneled into public schools, you would see a better product.
Evan, can I just say, though, I think that there is a community of educators and leaders that don't really know what's going to happen and aren't thinking about how do we respond other than to protest and to hopefully speak through the night so somebody doesn't get appointed. I think that, you know, you spoke of great schools for all. These folks are working mightily to do what you're talking about, which is to provide some kind of socioeconomic integration. Because the model suggests that if you create breakthrough schools or magnet schools where about there's a 60-40 split in terms of economic divide, that you can obtain better results. But here's the thing, Evan. I think people are so preoccupied with what's going on in Washington that they really don't understand the urgency of the situation. Because I'm going to be honest. I have people who say, well, you know, let's just fix what's wrong systemically inside of Rochester. Let me tell you something. Perception is reality. People think that charter schools are better. And you guys are absolutely right. They're not. They don't perform on average any better than public schools. But that's what people think. And you start putting out that beef in front of somebody and say, hey, listen, we'll give you $10,000 for you to send your kid to another school or we'll open up another charter school. They're going to think that that school is better. Unless we have something to show them that will keep them here. That's my concern. I don't think people really understand the urgency of the situation. It requires not only that we fix what is wrong within the Rochester City School District that people perhaps don't appreciate, but it also requires that, as you said, Steve, we develop well-planned, thoughtful models that will work for our children here, that will make parents say, hey, I want to send my kid there.
Every phone line is full. We're going to try to move quickly through the rest of the hour. A lot of people want to weigh in. Caitlin in Rochester next. Go ahead, Caitlin.
Hi, I'm Caitlin. I live in Rochester, and I'm the mom of two disabled kids. And I believe in choice. I actually send both my kids to the Rochester School for the Deaf, which is a really excellent school that's technically private and receives New York State funding. But so I just wanted to raise that my concern about DeVos isn't about the funds per se, but it's that she's going to potentially divert public funding to religious schools, and they're exempt from the Americans with Disabilities Act. Thank you.
Thanks for the phone call, Caitlin. I think you're getting a lot of nods around the table. Any dissent there? Okay.
Yeah. Special group left out.
Okay. Back to the phones. And John in Pittsford. Go ahead, John.
Hi. I don't know if it's been brought up, but during her hearings, it was mentioned that she funded a lot of the charter schools, and they were all for-profit charter schools, by the way, in Michigan. And with her money and her voice, those charter schools, when she took over the education, I think they were ranked 24th or 27th in the nation. And after she did all the charter schools, they were then ranked in the mid-40s in the nation. So not only did it not work, it made it a lot worse. And my fear is if this is the plan for the, you know, if it failed in Michigan under the way that she thought it was supposed to go, if this is the way she thinks it should go now, it's disastrous.
I don't know that she would argue it failed in Michigan. That's part of probably the challenge, don't you think, John?
I think, unfortunately, I don't believe that she would even know the numbers, to be honest. It sounds as though she knows very little about education other than how to throw money at it. And I don't think that, unfortunately, I would like to say that I would say the rest of the administration will step in and make sure the right thing is done, and I don't think that's going to happen either.
John, thanks for the phone call. Adam, go ahead.
I just want to quickly add, there's the data on what happened in charter schools in Michigan is indisputable. Nobody's saying that they in any way did better than the public schools. As a matter of fact, most of the decline, the caller is right, is attributable to the for-profit charter schools. So what you have here, really what the American public has here, is a choice that should be made carefully. I remember Mario Cuomo, a long time ago, used to say, be careful, don't go for what sounds good. Go for something that's good and sound. Mm-hmm. What Betsy DeVos is promoting may sound good to some people, but it is not in any way good and sound.
Tom on Twitter says, this panel really needed a charter school representative. Everyone on the panel has a vested financial interest in preserving the status quo. Tom, you know, if you want to come work for the station and help us attract people to come in on days where it's hard to get people, I'm with you. In fact, I was stunned that the creators of the National School Choice Week wouldn't even respond to us. They had an open door here. And they're very connected to the charter school movement. So, but we'll do that in the future. I mean, maybe sometimes people just don't want to come in when there's others who may disagree on a panel. It happens. We have to deal with it sometimes, Tom. But we will definitely talk about that in the future. Anybody want to respond to that, Van?
Evan, just very briefly, I do not support the status quo. That's why I ran for school board. I think everybody here got into this because we realize this is probably the most important aspect of a society's offerings, which is to provide a quality education. When I stepped in, when most of my colleagues on the board stepped in, things were, we had our share of challenges. So we don't accept the status quo. What I do believe is, as a person elected, along with my seven colleagues and the superintendent, is that we are responsible for providing the best possible choices within our district.
All right, Kathy in Fairport, next up on the phones. Go ahead, Kathy.
Hi, Evan. I am here, actually, to speak on behalf of charter schools. I'm on the board of E3 Rochester, which has opened two well-performing charter schools in the city in the last 3 years, I think it is. And I just wanted to comment on the cherry-picking idea that charter schools take the better students. Every time I hear it, it makes me a little bit angry because my role on the board has been recruitment of students and families. And I want to tell you, it's exceedingly difficult to do because most of these parents are working two and three jobs. It's not that they don't care about where their kids go to school. They just have limited bandwidth for dealing with a new problem that isn't necessarily a crisis. So that's number one. Number two, I think if you want to talk about cherry picking, it's the urban suburban transfer program that intentionally cherry picks kids out of public schools in the city and sends them off to the suburbs. I don't have a problem with that, but that's not us. The third thing is that I know for a fact that the vast majority of charter schools in the city do not turn away the lesser performing kids. In fact,
Kathy, I lost you. Are you still there?
Oh,
go ahead.
No, I'm a little unhappy to hear.
Kathy, I'm gonna dump this call because you cut off. But if you want to jump back on the line, that's great. Adam Urbanski, she's saying that a lot of people have it wrong on charter schools.
I think that we shouldn't stereotype charter schools. There are charter schools that go way out of their way to recruit truly disadvantaged students and populations. But that's not what gives them the edge. What gives them the edge is the fact that they don't have to keep them. The fact is that in public schools, you don't have the option to say to some children, you're too tough to educate, you cost too much to educate, you're too far behind, you don't get the support at home that you should be, therefore we're going to send you away, go to a charter school. We can't do that, but they can. So if you're going to have choices, and again, I agree. We should all agree there should be more choices, but let's make those choices fair.
Yeah, I mean, and Kathy, and if you want to, you know, maybe send me an email and let's continue the conversation because I want to be fair to everybody. I mean, charters and public schools don't have the same playing field. Like that shouldn't be controversial, right? I mean, what Adam is saying there is not wrong. It doesn't mean that charter schools are bad or mm-hmm. that there are some phenomenal people involved in charter school mm-hmm. efforts, just phenomenal. So Kathy, why don't you send me an email? I'd love to kind of continue that conversation because I didn't get a chance to ask you what you think about Betsy DeVos and her appointment. I'm going to read one more listener comment here, and I'll let our guests try to jump in with some quick final thoughts because this hour has just melted away like ice cream on a hot summer day. My goodness. Dan says, in my opinion, DeVos's confirmation is a two-pronged assault. It funnels money into parochial schools and allows politics into church. Daniel's pointing out that Betsy DeVos has long favored religious schooling and that his concern is that this is about moving more tax dollars and more money and more kids into religious schooling. Briefly, Van, thoughts?
Well, I turn to this notion that parents ought to have choices. I know I'm going to sound like a broken record, and it is.
Are they tapping your phones? Do you think they're listening to this program?
And it is our responsibility to create those choices within our district.
Okay. All right, Steve Eubing.
Again, what people have to remember is when we are talking about Betsy DeVos's model in Michigan, it's very, very different than what we have here in New York State. We don't have parochial school funding through the charter school law. It's a much better regulated system in New York State. In Michigan and some other states, it's just out of control.
Okay. Adam Urbanski.
Well, she doesn't deny that she's in favor of Christian schools and religious schools. And I think parents should have the right to send their children to those schools. I just don't want the money to come out of the very needy schools in the public school system.
Trina Newton?
I agree with the other three panelists, and I had just written some notes here. I think that New York State does a very good job of the process of allowing charter schools to open, the entire vetting process. And I guess one of my biggest fears is taxpayer money being used for pouchers for private and religious schools.
Okay. Well, a couple of listeners have urged me to play the clip of Al Franken and Betsy DeVos going back and forth about proficiency and growth. I don't have time. We actually pulled that clip. We got so stuck on school choice, which is not a bad thing. People want to talk about this. But proficiency and growth probably deserves its own conversation on a separate day. And our new Secretary of Education was plainly unaware of that debate when she came in for a confirmation hearing. Now, I assume she's done some studying. But it's also fair to say she's not the only one in charge of that department. She's got staff. There's all kinds of people. And it will be interesting to see what becomes of proficiency versus growth going forward. So maybe that is a whole separate day. And so if you emailed me about that, we're going to keep that on the front burner, and we'll get back to that very soon. If you emailed me about charter schools and choice, and you're pro-choice, as in pro-school choice, we'll bring in other folks as well. I mean, I want to continue that conversation. Kathy in Fairport, I want to hear from you. But man, this hour went quickly. Trina Newton in Geneva, always grateful for your time. Thank you so much, Trina.
Thank you.
The superintendent of Geneva City Schools, Van White, president of the Rochester School Board. Thank you, Van. Nice seeing you here.
Nice to be here.
Steve Eubing, from, among many other things, the Warner School of Education. Nice to see you,
Always
Steve.
A pleasure, Evan.
And Adam Urbanski, president of the Rochester Teachers Association. Thank you, Adam. Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, Megan Max, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a great afternoon. We will talk to you Tuesday on Member-Supported Public Radio.